town that we all know. It's still out there, it's still on fire. We'll never know. There was once a light inside someone's eye. Bright, it shone the time. I swear I saw it, it was fine.
Sundown Yellow Moon is an evocative play about twin sisters, Ray and Joey, who returned to the small southern college town where they grew up. They've come back because they're worried about their father, who has been suspended from his teaching job for an altercation with the dean. But returning home is always a dangerous journey, and you can never be sure what will happen when the past and the present meet in that most and least familiar of places. The play is produced by Ars Nova and the WP and is at the McGinn-Cazale Theater at 2162 Broadway until April 1st. Joining us now are playwright Rachel Bonds and Abigail and Sean Bengson, who wrote the music and performed together as the Bengsons. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Does the title come from a Bob Dylan song?
It does. It comes from If You See Her, Say Hello, which is on Blood on the Tracks, which is a song that they talk about in the last scene of the play. So I pulled it from there.
And Abigail, are you and Sean big Dylan fans?
Oh, man. I feel like we are yet to fully do the deep Dylan dive.
Because the play takes place in the present, and young people like the ones in the play and you are still listening to Bob Dylan?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, come on. I mean, I feel like a lot of the influences for the music for this play had to do with the music that Rachel and we were sort of brought up listening to.
Raised on, yes.
Yeah, a lot of the old folkies who are, you know, brilliant and still influence us now.
Timeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
The things that people are still listening to in college towns?
Man, I hope so.
I hope so, too. I certainly did.
Well, yeah, Rachel, you call this a nighttime play with music. What do you mean by that?
A lot of the scenes take place at night. So a lot of the scenes between Ray and her father are in the dead of night. And then there are all these scenes outside in the woods at the reservoir, also in the wee hours of the morning. It sort of adds to the mystery of the play, so that's why we called it a nighttime play.
But it's also about people of a couple of generations, and getting back to the Dylan music or the other music you were talking about, kids often don't want to listen to the music that their parents listen to. But to some degree, this is because this is a play where generations meet?
Yes. I mean, I grew up listening to the music that my dad loved. So that was Dylan, and that was the Beatles, and that was Paul Simon's Graceland on endless loop on every car trip we ever took. Mm-hmm. And I loved the music that my dad loved, but I think that was because he loved to sing, and we would cook together, and he would sing, and part of me loving the music was loving being with him.
And why does so much of it take place after twilight? Are there things that happen at night that can happen in the daytime?
I think so. I think that strange hour allows for some conversation that maybe isn't as easy in the daylight. When I was a younger woman, I took care of my father when he was very ill, and so we were up at very odd hours. And that was when we had most of our best conversations. So I think that's why so many of these scenes happen at night.
Now, when you work on a play like this, of course, getting along with each other is important,
yes.
Collaboration. But haven't each of you given birth to baby boys in the last year?
We have.
Was that an extra bonding thing?
Right. It was indeed.
It certainly has been.
They are 4 weeks apart. So Abigail gave birth in early September, and I was early October.
And were you already thinking about this play at the time?
Yes. We had workshopped an earlier draft of the play before either of us were pregnant, I think. Or maybe you were very early on in your pregnancy.
I It was very early on because I was quite sick.
Yes.
The first times that we read this beautiful play. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, we should note that Sean had to leave the studio for a moment to take care of one of his babies. And I was wondering if the wonderful crazy lullaby that the dad sings to Ray is something that he wrote for his son.
Oh, well, you know, Sean and I, we wrote that tune together. There was this great... One of the really exciting things about working on this play was that Rachel has a great sense of how music can interact with drama, in our opinion. And she had these really evocative moments where it would just say, we need a song here, and like one word about it. And this song just said, the raccoon song. And there was something, and we knew it was a song that a father would sing to his daughter. And that really got us spinning. What is a raccoon song? And we ended up writing this sort of dark lullaby.
Can you sing a little bit of it?
Oh my god. Raccoons in the bin, chewing on their paws. Little hands are growing claws. Your hands are growing claws. A little creepy.
It is. Well, that's why we like it.
Creepy things happen at nighttime as well.
That's right. Yes.
Rachel, you've said that you're interested in the quotidian of language. What do you mean by that?
Oh, so many of my plays are made up of uhs and yeah and and they all have different meanings. So if there's a yeah with three H's, that means something different than a yeah with one H and a period. Or if there's an with five H's, that's different than a comma or a dash. These things are all very, very important to me.
It's good that you don't speak that way, because it's almost guaranteed that somebody in my audience is going to write in and complain that somebody said like too many times.
Oh,
or I know what you mean.
I fear I am guilty of that at times.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm trying to do better.
But the challenge is to dramatize the way people are inarticulate?
Yes.
Do you think in the play and in life it's the undertow of grief that makes people feel less able to speak directly?
That was certainly my experience. I think I lost my father when I was 19, and I had a lot of trouble articulating anything about it. I felt very adrift, and there wasn't a lot of language to use that felt at all meaningful to me. I started writing a lot then to try to get at what I was experiencing, but even that felt a little... like it wasn't enough.
Are there some of these conversations things you wish you'd had with your father?
Sure. I think it was very hard for me to actually say to him, I'm worried about you. And I let Ray say that to her father, but he's asleep when she says it.
And people say things that don't necessarily get explained.
Sure.
Why? That's because in a small town, people kind of would know what you're referring to?
That's certainly part of it. I also think I'm very interested in subtext, so I didn't want to give too much away. So much about this play is about what's unsaid but understood between people.
Why is country music popular in a town like the one in this play?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that might actually be a question for Rachel.
Well, it's the South.
Yeah.
So that's one reason. It's just the setting is it's certainly, I grew up in Tennessee, and that music is everywhere. We weren't so far from Nashville, and it's just part of the setting.
The lyrics of one of the songs is, it's a country song when everything goes wrong.
That's right. Well, I think that was part of the exciting challenge of this piece was, the one thing is that, you know, because there's so much sort of subterranean emotion present in the script, that it's really exciting as composers to get to sort of express some of that inexpressible with music. And then also, you know, country music is something Sean and I hadn't really dabbled in before this experience. And we did a bit of a dive and really fell in love with the sort of irony and wit present in a lot of that music.
Are the characters more able to express themselves clearly with a guitar in their hands? I was thinking about some of the people who are the stutterers who don't stutter when they sing. Mel Tillis, yeah. Bill Withers, some others. Right. Singing takes over?
I think that's right. I mean, I know in my life, you know, Rachel and I have strange sort of mirror experiences in our lives and went through some really hard times around the same times in our lives. And, you know, we've all had that experience, I think, of someone asking you how you are at that time and words sort of escaping you. But for me, performing, singing, writing music, you know, you have the ability to free yourself in your expression.
But, Rachel, two people in the play who had serious musical aspirations, Carver the social worker, mm-hmm. who's meeting with his father, and Ray, are both creatively blocked. And then later in the play, a poet, Ted Driscoll, who's working in the college, also is having trouble writing.
Yes.
How much of this is about struggles
about myself?
With writer's block?
Oh, I'm sure it's all about me and my struggles therein. But I don't know. I think I was... I'm always drawn to people who feel stuck in some way. And that because Ray is a musician and Ted is a poet, for me that immediately meant, oh, they're struggling in their work and they're feeling lost. And that drew me to them as characters. I'm always drawn to people who feel like they know which way they need to move, but they can't quite get there.
And you describe your writing process as athletic, like running.
Yes.
Do you actually do the running? Joyce Carillo sometimes talks about coming up with ideas when she's running.
I often do. I sadly have taken a long break from running since our child was born, but I miss it a lot. I was a very avid runner. Abigail also is a big runner. That's another thing we connect on.
We did some research and looked at the backstage casting call, which specifically says that race isn't a factor in terms of casting the characters. So you cast a white father and a mixed race and mixed race twins.
I did.
And no one in the play ever refers to it, even though it's a southern town?
Well, it's sort of lightly mentioned. There's a small moment between Ray and Tom in which she said, when they're talking about her mother, and she says it wasn't easy for her living here. And he says, I know that. And she says, do you? So there are these
small... We can't give away too much.
There are these small moments that I felt were important about bringing that in. But for me, it was just about the characters being characters. And those actresses honestly came in and gave beautiful auditions, and that was partly why we cast them. Mm-hmm.
Now, Abigail, you also grew up in a small college town, but in
sure
the north,
did.
Middlebury,
right.
Vermont?
That's right. I did.
Were your parents involved with the college?
They weren't, but they were really involved in education. They founded an elementary school, sort of strange hippie elementary school that I attended in Middlebury.
And you and Sean have played in venues all over the world. When you go home, do you feel genuinely known and recognized there?
Oh, wow. I mean, there's always that strange reunion when you come back to a home after a long time away. I feel like you re-meet yourself every time you come home, especially if you're a road warrior the way many musicians like Sean and I are. I think we do have the privilege of being our real faces being seen, and I think that comes from getting to perform our music at home.
Rachel, in previous interviews, you've said that you purposely avoided setting a play in the South.
I did. I think I needed some distance from it. This ended up being a very personal play in a way. It took me almost 10 years to really write about my home. And my father. I just needed some time before I could really get there.
You included a quote from James Agee in the program.
I did. He went to my high school. So,
really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
He
That's
did.
Great.
He did. He's a bit of a local hero in my hometown and also a
that?
Hero of mine. Suwanee, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And the school is St. Andrew Swanee, but it was a slightly different name at the time he went there. But I read Death in the Family when I was in ninth grade, and it made a huge, deep, cutting impression on me. And so I pulled a quote from it for the beginning of this play.
Abigail, I understand that you and Sean have a full musical being produced at Ars Nova in the fall.
Oh, my goodness. Whew, we do. We do have a full musical being produced.
You did something called 100 Days, a musical about your relationship. That was at the Public Theater's Under the Radar Festival in January.
That's right.
We be seeing that again anytime soon?
Oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to fully answer that question, but I will say I sure hope so, and we should
Me
be able
too.
To say soon.
Well, thank you so much for being
thank
on our
you,
show.
Leonard.
It's been a great pleasure. I've been speaking with Rachel Bonds, whose play Sundown Yellow Moon is currently being performed uptown at 2162 Broadway. That's at
76th and Broadway.
Street. Mm-hmm. And it'll be there until April 1st. And also Abigail Bengtson, who with Sean Bengtson wrote the music, and they both perform as the Bengtsons.
That's right.
And tell Sean we missed him.
Oh,
we
I will. And our little son, Louis, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
See anemones make their enemies in the courtyard. Trying so